Monster Man, Episode 83, Bullywug to Bunyip. Stop hissing with the Monster Man, it was a bad plan, but I had to get the sound on it. Hello, and welcome to Bullywug Buddy, a show about bullywugs because bullywugs are great. Nah, I'm just kidding, it's Monster Man. It's me, James Holloway, and in this second season of Monster Man, I'm reading my way through the 1981 Fiend Folio supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In this episode, we're completing our journey through the B section of the Fiend Folio, and we're talking about Bullywugs and the Bunyip. So let's get started. Now, as you may have guessed from the intro to this episode, I am pretty fond of bullywugs. I don't really know why. I think it's to do with the fact that when I was younger, my local game shop was a place in Palo Alto, California called Gamescape. It was located, originally it was located on California Avenue, and I spent many a happy hour in there, probably not buying as much stuff as I should have, but just sort of looking at things and talking to people and so on. And one of the guys who worked there was the first person who told me what a bullywug was, because he was thinking of making a slan army for Warhammer using bullywug models, about which more anon. But I think I just became very fond of the name, the sound of the name, bullywug. It sounds like a critter that there might be in a fairy tale. It sounds like if you went to go visit your cousin who lived in an old house on the edge of the swamp, he would say, and of course the locals say, that if you go into the swamp at night, the bullywug will get you. But no one believes that. Ha ha ha. And then he would go to bed, and you would be left up in the library reading his, you know, Eldritch tomes and looking out over the darkened swamp for the distant gleam of the eyes of the bullywug. Now, that is not what the bullywug is like in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. Bullywugs are scrubs. I mean, they try hard. They got a hop attack that's pretty okay. And they have a chameleon skin that lets them hide in their native kind of wetlands. But let's face it, they are little frog guys, and they're not all that menacing. Maybe that's what I like about them. As we know from kobolds and so on, I am a softie for low-hit-die monsters with a can-do attitude, and I think that describes the bullywug. Now, the creation of the bullywug is credited to Luke Gygax and Gary Gygax, a father and son team. And I've been looking for information on the sort of early history of the bullywug, and so far haven't really been able to find any. They're interesting to me because they are among the few kind of low-hit-die cannon fodder that doesn't have some kind of obvious folkloric connection, right? When you think about, like, goblins, bugbears, hobgoblins, kobolds, they all have, you know, the names of those all come from the same sources, that is to say, sort of folk tales and fairy tales about monsters. Now, later on, of course, we're going to get a bunch of low-hit-die cave dwellers that, you know, aren't really based on anything except themselves. But the bullywugs kind of stand chronologically in the middle of that sequence, don't they? And that's sort of interesting. The first appearance of bullywugs in a scenario is in the scenario Dwellers of the Forbidden City, in which they're just one of a number of factions that live in this, well, forbidden city, this ancient abandoned city. Like the Lost Caverns of Tsoikanth, which we talked about when we did the episode on the Bodok, Dwellers in the Forbidden City was based on a tournament module, but I believe that the tournament module was much smaller than the final published Dwellers of the Forbidden City, and I'm not sure if it had the bullywugs in it. The reason I'm curious about it is that if it did, it would mean that bullywugs were, you know, slated for inclusion in this module, which in its original form came out before the Fiend Folio, but I'm pretty sure that I don't know if they're in there or not. I don't know what the original tournament version of Dwellers of the Forbidden City looked like, so if you happen to know, let me know. So I don't know if they come from a specific game context or whether they were just made up by, you know, Luke Gygax together with his dad as cool creatures, but bullywugs, like, TSR spent a little time trying to make bullywugs happen. They're notably, they're one of the monsters in the Dungeons & Dragons animated series, presumably because they were something that TSR had the copyright on, and there were even toys made of them, not miniature figures, but toys. I'm also curious to know if there's any connection between the slan in Warhammer and bullywugs. Obviously, Games Workshop did get its start creating things for fantasy RPGs before developing them into the Warhammer game that we know today. So I wonder if, you know, bullywugs weren't being conveniently reused, but I genuinely don't have an answer to that question. Someone who's more knowledgeable about the early Citadel stuff can tell me. So bullywugs are pretty great. I mean, they're just swamp goblins, basically. But, you know, the usual band of kind of tribal bandits. They're explicitly scrubs, other form of cold-blooded creatures sort of look down on them. But they've got a couple of neat tricks, they've got a good optimistic attitude, and their name is just so much fun to say. Bullywug. Bullywug. I mean, it's just really enjoyable. So bullywugs remain one of my favorite, and I do feel like an attack by goblins in any game could maybe be slightly improved by having it be bullywugs. Ooh, speaking of a similarity between the bullywugs and the Slann, I note that there are some bullywugs who are intelligent and some bullywugs who are primitive, and that the primitive bullywugs hate the intelligent ones, which is quite interesting. So the bullywugs are sort of sympathetic in a way. They're under attack by their own brutish ancestors? Descendants? You know, so maybe there's that thing, like the Slann are the descendants of the old ones who are a much more advanced culture than they are. Maybe the, you know, the bullywugs were once much more sophisticated than they are now. And in fact, it's not that these dumb bullywugs are their primitive ancestors, but that they're actually the future of the ever-degenerating bullywugs. I think I said this about lizard men already, though, which makes sense because it's kind of a theme in the works of Robert E. Howard. Although his were snake men, not lizard men, but tomato-tomato, really. Anyway, next we have the Bunyip. And the Bunyip comes from Australian folklore. Its name originates in the Wemba Wemba language, and it may just mean something like evil spirit. Bunyips are depicted in a wide variety of different ways, and the only thing that they seem to have in common is that they're water monsters. They live in rivers, streams, ponds, and so on. And if you come down too close to the edge of the water and you're not safe, you know, the Bunyip may come up and grab you. This Bunyip was submitted by Dermot Jackson, and it is much more toward the animal end of the animal-to-spirit spectrum of stories about bunyips. Again, it's kind of a water horror monster, right? It's something that adds a complication to this scene in which you're being pursued down the river in your canoes, and one of them tips over, and the bunyips are splashing around in the water. It's not malevolent. It's just kind of playful. It's basically like a big seal, and it doesn't attack large targets unless it's provoked, although it might try and, like, bite your limb off and swallow it to take it home for a meal. It's basically like a crocodile, which is sort of interesting. The folkloric bunyip is basically just kind of a dangerous water monster. There are some descriptions of it that seem to be referring to a crocodile, but others are much stranger. But its role genuinely seems to be that it's kind of a cautionary creature. Like, sort of like Nixies or other water monsters, they exist partly as kind of cautionary tales to keep children from playing at the edges of streams, right? The idea is that, like, you're a little kid and, you know, kids want to go splash in the water, but it might not be safe for them. You know, maybe there's a strong current or whatever. You don't want them to fall in and maybe be in danger, so you tell them, you know, oh, if you go too close to that stream, the bunyip will get you. It may also be that there was some kind of miscommunication about a real animal that resulted in this fanciful description of the bunyip. And, of course, you know, Australia, we tend to think of Aboriginal Australia as being one shared culture, but in fact there are many different cultures and languages within Australia, and so, you know, what's called a bunyip in one place might be called something else elsewhere, and those legends might have significant differences. So I think the only thing we can really say about the bunyip is that it's a kind of water monster, and that the version of it in the Fiend Folio, which is sort of a big predatory mammal, is as good as anything. Again, I think it's just sort of a tonal shift. Like, going into the water and having to worry about the crocodiles getting you does feel different from going into the water and having to worry about the bunyip getting you, even though, fundamentally, the peril is pretty much the same. So I'm definitely putting a bunyip in something. It's hard to imagine a bad guy riding on a bunyip, or even keeping a vicious pool of bunyips in his evil lair, right? That doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense. I think a bunyip is definitely an environmental hazard monster. Just something that you have to worry about when you're crossing that slippery trunk that has toppled across the fast-flowing river, while the bullywugs' croaks are getting louder and louder, and their poison-tipped spears are winging their way through the jungle air. Also, I wonder how many different monsters have an ability to sever one of your limbs, and how many different in-entry subsystems this leads to there being. I don't object to this at all, actually. I think, you know, chances are if you're running a fight there's a bunyip in, you've got the bunyip rules open in front of you, And if it bites people's limbs off, you don't want to have to, like, start flipping through the DMG to find out what happens when you try to bite someone's hand. So it all makes sense, and it gives the Bunyip a fun additional danger to pose to you, but I am just sort of curious about it. Okay, that is it for the B chapter of the Fiend Folio. In our next episode, we will be starting up the C chapter. We'll be talking about the Carbuncle, the Carioted Column, and the Caterwaul. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.